Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Rob?
I'm feeling the power of love. And
oh, really?
Yes. That's nice. And I am not referring to Celine Dion or even Frankie Goes to Hollywood this time. But I've been thinking a lot about love today. Unrequited love of my own. But also...
Oh.
I know, life's hard, isn't it? But also love that brings people together. And today we have not one, but two guests, Russell Tovey.
Yes, double trouble.
One is someone that you and I actually met at Louis Vuitton years ago at some random event. And yes. I remember us all hanging out.
That was a Kim Jones event, wasn't it?
That's what it was. It was Kim Jones. And you were wearing that t-shirt. Yeah. I remember that graphic t-shirt that he made you wear. Yeah, and she is a leading singer-songwriter, incredibly talented, has a new album on the way. And the reason I bring up love is because today we are also meeting her incredible husband, who is in the art world like I am and like you are. And I've never actually met Casper, but I'm looking forward to chatting to him today.
Same.
So yeah. Love is an important thing. And I also really respect both of them because they seem to be incredibly compassionate people who deeply care about art as well as the environment and lots of other issues, which we will be discussing in today's episode. So
amazing.
We would like to welcome to Talk Art,
Casper Joplin and Ellie Goulding.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having
How
us.
How are you both today?
Really good.
Of course. God, it's a pleasure. Where are you in the world?
We are in Oxfordshire.
In our little cottage,
yeah.
Good one.
What's the art like in Oxfordshire for you guys?
I'm in a room with Pettibons. Ellie's in a room with Meritu.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Ooh.
That's proper.
And, I've got a cat and a piano.
We've got some good art going on here.
Yeah, but that we probably shouldn't tell people.
Is it a big Julie Meritu upstairs? Is it a big one?
I wish it was a big one. No, it's a little work on paper. Well, it's a vellum and paper and... Mm-hmm. Ellie bought it from auction from Sotheby's about two or three years ago. But we love her work. So we actually, there's another piece above the toaster, which we moved the toaster, but there's two pieces in the kitchen. It's strange to be sitting in different rooms in the house, but...
It is, you're both on this chat. Is that normal? Have you spent a lot of time apart during lockdown within the same house, or do you find that works?
We actually have it. I think, I don't know what Casper thinks, but I think it's worked really well. It's felt like, because this cottage is quite small, so we put the Meritu up because it's literally become the central feature of the kitchen, and it kind of everything, surrounds it. So I've been upstairs at the kitchen table quite a bit, whereas Casper has been downstairs studying away from me and my singing. And I've also built a sort of mini studio in the little living room, and I've got the piano in there, got the guitars, got the synth, got a bit of recording. I say recording stuff because this quarantine time has made me realise how technologically inept I am, and it's been really stressful. It's been a lot of sweating, so actually it's kind of, I think, what do you think, Casper? I think it's worked quite well.
It's worked very well. And I, the same way Ellie's built a studio, I've built a little office/man cave in the basement that has my desk with my multiple monitors, has a fridge with my beers in, and then it has lots of little sort of gem artworks that mean something to me or that I've collected over time that aren't in the kitchen or there isn't much wall space in this house, which is a shame.
That's an understatement.
But We have a lot of art leaning against the wall in various parts of the house.
Do you buy work and think, oh, we're going to put that in Oxford, or we're going to keep that in London, or we're going to take that somewhere else? Or do you buy the work and then think where you're going to put it?
Definitely the latter. I mean, to me, I don't really think of how it fits in a room. And actually, I just got off a long phone call with someone who's trying to fill one wall in their apartment in Miami, and I'm trying to help them with that, but I'm also not too good at finding something at certain dimensions. I more look at the art itself. And
I can't imagine looking at it like that, you know. I can't imagine saying to someone who's trying to, you know, in this case, Casper, who is, I suppose, technically like my sort of, I don't know, art dealer. Ooh. I couldn't think of it in terms of dimensions. Where I've heard, if Casper's ever been on the phone, I have heard, and he's on, you know, it's on loud or whatever, I have heard people say, yeah, I've got this huge space that I want to fill with something. But I think, you know, we've got a ginormous Tracy Emin, which I absolutely adore. And it's currently in storage. Sadly, God, that's just so sad. But we haven't gone anywhere. We literally don't have wall space for it. But I had to have it. It was my kind of diva moment where I saw it and fell in love with it and said, I have to have this regardless of wall space. So I'm just glad that it is in my possession, and at some point in the future I can have it somewhere. But
and you did actually live with that in New York, didn't you? Because I saw a photo of you in New
York. Yes, we did put it up in New York. We very, very temporarily had this huge apartment. It was kind of like my rock star era, where I said to my accountant, who was quite nervous about this, and I said that I'd spotted this apartment, and I mean, it was short-lived for that reason, because it was such a huge apartment and not that affordable. We did have it up temporarily, but mostly it's been sadly in storage, but hopefully it'll come back out again.
Where did you see the work? Did you see it in a art gallery context, or a museum, or
Did we see that at Art Basel, Casper?
It's a bit of an awkward part in the conversation.
Is this art politics now?
No. Well, we actually bought it from Xavier Hufkins, who is not the gallerist
family
of Tracy, who we really love, who is family. So yeah, we can cut that bit out of the podcast, but.
No, we keep it in. This is gossip after all, art gossip.
But since then, in terms of not having wall space, since then we bought a similarly sized Donna Juanco picture from Javier Perez.
Perez Projects.
Exactly. We love her paintings. Yeah. And then we actually bought a George Roy picture. I don't know if you know his work, but also a sort of younger artist, which we really like the look of. I think that might
Donna,
have been from
Donna
Perez
Juanca's amazing as well. I went to her early performances in Paris before she was even signed up to a gallery. And then she did the Zabludovich collection in London and a few other things.
Of course.
I actually loved her whole immersive like performances with all the kind of naked figures. And
exactly. Yeah. I've shown Ellie these videos, and I'm trying to get her to reach out, and Ellie's new album is called Brightest Blue. So it's a lot of Donna's work is blue, and the sort of performative art side of it is also very cool. And also actually, as soon as I've actually never seen a performance, but I've seen pictures and videos of them, and they remind me of Eddie Peake's performances, which I have seen and I love.
I've seen
and actually
those,
they were all coming up at the same time as well. So I think there was a kind of zeitgeisty thing happening where you had a lot of kind of performance art all happening at the same time.
Bit of nudity really in performance art as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Nudity, yes. Lots of nudity.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Art Basel, Ellie. It's going to galleries and art fairs, because I've also seen you at Frieze before. And actually, I think Casper even posted a Billy Childish off my booth last year. So big up to Casper.
Oh, did I?
Well done.
I like Billy Childish.
Yeah,
I also love Carl Freeman Gallery.
Thank you. But so do you guys go to art fairs and galleries a lot together? Is that kind of part of your dating history at all?
I was going to just do a jokey thing that Casper drags me along, but that's not true. I really do love going to galleries and seeing new things. And I mean, you can't really compare it to like seeing, you know, when you go to a fashion show and you see things for the very first time and it's very exciting. I think Casper has, I have to give credit to Casper that he has got me into a lot of things. I did collect a bit of art before I met Casper. I would say, how would you describe it, Casper, what I had before you said that I got taste?
it was decorative art, but it looked nice in the house, and it was
I was thinking about it earlier actually, that I feel like it was a lot of dark stuff, you know. It's predominantly kind of it wasn't for everyone. It was stuff that made you feel slightly uncomfortable. It was a lot of kind of ghostly, like things like shipwrecks and skeletal things. Wow. I bought these kind of, I've put them in cages, not cages, I've put them in kind of cabinets because of my cat. Yeah. My cat absolutely loves hanging on them, obviously. But they're like kind of skulls, but they're...
Quite gothic-y style.
Yeah, kind of gothic-y. And I think I've always had that kind of taste. I think since my teens, I've always kind of liked having things around that make me feel weirdly kind of safe, and have always, you know, I've always been kind of had a... like a maybe darker songwriting style. I mean, I've always made kind of, you know, happy and bright pop music, but my lyrics have always had kind of a darker side. And I think the art kind of reflected that. I think in a weird way, they kind of made me feel safe. And then Casper came along and just kind of completely opened me up to things. And I realized that you didn't have to have, you know, black and white art and photography and dark things to... as expression. And so I just discovered a whole new world, particularly through female artists.
Funnily enough, when I did come along and I went to Ellie's house for the first time, there were Gormley Prince, there was a Rakib Shaw, like all these artists that I know and love, and and a lot of the sort of White Cube artists actually were on Ellie's wall, which was pretty... That was definitely a good thing. Our first date was to an Anselm Kiefer exhibition in Bermondsey, and which is a bit of a dark exhibition. Well, it was a double. Yeah. We did that, and then we went to the Rauschenberg exhibition.
Well, thank God we had things to look at, because I don't think we said a single word to each other on the date, did we?
No, we were so shy,
but we had so much to look at, I think we felt we had like a connection without having to really say a whole lot. So,
How did you meet? Did you meet through art circles?
No, we met. I just got to New York and I had a show there. It was like a real pop tart show with lots of American pop artists. I think Justin Bieber was playing, Shawn Mendes, and then it was just me, you know, the only English singer, and I turned up and I'd been really poorly. I'd had this flu thing for months and it just didn't go away, and I remember feeling exhausted. And then a friend of mine who lived in New York said, I would love to put a dinner on for you. And I'd never heard that before. No one had ever said they wanted to put a dinner on for me before.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very American thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I was simultaneously very excited at the prospect, but also just feeling so rough I went and then I think I downed a few drinks to sort of get merry and be in the zone. And then, and I was sat next to Casper, and I think the first conversation we had was the fact that I don't know how we got onto this, but that I was vegetarian and, you know, cared a lot about the environment. And then Casper talked about how much of a carnivore he was. And then I was like, well, that's that. I didn't think we'd see each other again.
I'm a proud Yorkshireman. I like pies. I like jacket potatoes. But actually that night we were having shepherd's pie, and I made a lentil and sweet potato shepherd's pie for Ellie. So before I even met her, I was making an effort. I didn't heat it up.
So Casper, you were talking about White Cube earlier on, and we touched on Xavier Hufkins, but we don't need to go there. But you share the surname with a very famous kind of leader of the British art scene, the YBA movement, Jay Joplin. So he's your uncle, right?
Yeah, he's my uncle. He's always been an influence for me. Not to be cheesy, but he's always his success and his what he's done is probably the reason actually that I've There are multiple reasons why I got into art, but I think it was most likely the biggest reason.
Because you must have grown up surrounded by art and all the like the YBA artists and the White Cube artists, right?
Well, I wouldn't say I was surrounded by them. I went to the White Cube shows. My dad took me when I was younger. I wasn't really that into art. I wanted to be an architect actually when I was younger, and then I remember the moment I thought actually I quite like art, which was in the gift shop of the Tate. And I don't remember which Tate it was, but I bought a poster, which I still say is the first piece of art I bought. But I bought a poster by Sir Terry Frost called June Red and Black, which is in the Tate collection. It's a 1965 painting. It's very simple, but it's just I could just look at it and I really liked it. So I had that. I put it up in my bedroom alongside my poster of the Pantheon, which is my favorite building.
Mine
and
too.
I must have been. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Incredible.
Yeah. So I must have been 8 or 9 years old then. But I had a lot of the White Cube maybe buzz around me. But I wasn't. You know, Jay was busier than anyone I know. Still is. So I don't. I wasn't. I wouldn't say I was that. I wasn't surrounded by them.
You also did some art. Don't be modest.
Oh, really? You made art?
I've seen some of his art. and I mean, look, bloody hell, I didn't do anything like that when I was in school. I mean, I did art classes. We drew out bowls of fruit and things. But, I mean, some of your stuff, Casper, is very good, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
is the style in Terry Frost style? Was it like post-war British?
I would say... Firstly, my art was not very serious. I did it in school, I did it in university, and I just as a sort of fun side project. But the influences, if there were any, were Rauschenberg.
Right.
Richard Prince joke painting. I made a big sort of tarp of a joke painting, my own joke, which is
just... What was the joke, Casper?
Casper, what was the joke?
It's probably not that funny anymore, but it was about... It was about rock, paper, scissors. It was about rock beating paper and something. It was something my sister had actually said to one of my sisters had said to me when she was very young, and I thought it was funny. But so Richard Prince, I did some Warhol.
We're hearing the joke, aren't we?
Yeah.
Come on, Casper.
I don't remember it.
I've heard that.
Yes, you do.
You two make each other laugh a lot. I like that.
It was something about rock, actually, you know, the fact that paper doesn't beat rock or something, you know, because if you wrap a rock in a paper, I don't remember the exact joke, but I'm sure it still holds its humor today.
Yeah, good.
But no, I was into silk screening. I made some prints, everyone's into Warhol. So I made some silk screens of the Queen and of Darwin. I had this whole, there was a whole, you know, money. It was the Queen's face off a banknote, which turns out it's very hard to photocopy a banknote because all photocopies are programmed not to photocopy them. So anyway,
that's a fun fact.
Yeah, no, it was, I had trouble, but I didn't have anyone knocking on my door, which was good. But my art is not important. Is not important in the slightest. It was just a bit of fun.
We love personal stories.
Yeah.
Ellie, what was it like for you growing up? Do you have any recollection of going to museums or seeing things when you were a kid? Or
when I was growing up, oh my gosh, I think I had quite a different upbringing to Casper, not in a negative way, just very different. I was very into museums. I'd never visited London, but somehow I got hold of the like leaflet things for like the Imperial War Museum and the church and the Cabinet War. My dad and my brother and my uncle, everyone obsessed with the First and Second World War. So I don't know how I had all these leaflets and museums, but never really art. I think I had a few, I think I've had a few postcards on my wall from various things. I think we had one shop in my local town that was like a, inverted commas, like hippie shop that had that sold, you know, various posters and postcards and you know, incense sticks and stick-on tattoos and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that was my only thing, but I suppose I was quite out of everything. I think Casper probably had that, you know, head start with Jay and kind of being surrounded by that. But my mum went to art college. She was into her drawing. My dad was a guitarist in a band. So I definitely had more of a, you know, I suppose arty, creative upbringing, yeah. but maybe not in the same way as Casper did.
What age did you know, Casper, then, that the art world was for you?
Age is tough because I have such a terrible memory, but my grandmother took me to Venice when I was probably 11 or 12. And I remember it was a big trip because it was just me and her and it was very personal. And she wanted to show me the art because she knew I was interested in it. So it's actually the only time it's not the only time I've been to Venice. I've been to Venice a few times, but it was the first time I've been to Venice. And I, you know, learned about the Medicis, which was really interesting. I went to the Accademia, yes. I saw the Veroneses, the Canalettos, the Bellini, the Titians, mm-hmm. you know, all of those. And then since mm-hmm. then, you know, I sort of fell in love with Italy. Ellie and I both love Italy. And then I
It's quite hard not to, isn't it? It's just hard. Another world. Yeah.
True. Especially for art, yes, it's the best.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's so Florence is my probably my favorite city in the world. And mm-hmm. so I visited there.
That's where Michelangelo's
times.
David is. I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Yeah. And all the Caravaggios, and there's it's just amazing. Fra Angelico, you name it. So yeah, I did, I guess I Venice and Florence, and then I sort of flipped the other way and went completely contemporary and modern was my interest. And that's what I did in university.
And you studied at Harvard, didn't you?
I went to Harvard. I did art history and you have to pick a focus. And my focus was modern and contemporary art. But saying that, there was a brief flirtation with wanting to go into the film world. So I did I did an internship with Plan B in LA, which is Brad Pitt's production company. Mm-hmm. I interned mm-hmm. at ICM, the big talent agency. I sort of did all these. Yep. I did Protozoa, which is Darren Aronofsky, and I did a few weeks in London at Working Title. I sort of dipped my toe in that when I was young, you know, all sort of unpaid internships, and then figured out in my last year at Harvard that however hard I was trying to get away from art, art is what was calling me back.
I found it really interesting, Casper, that you ended up, instead of going into the primary market, which is obviously Jay's territory in a way, you kind of went to the secondary market. You interned at Christie's and then eventually worked at Sotheby's for a while. Was that like a conscious decision, or was it just that you were interested in the auction world? Or
no, that so I was interested in the art world in general. And Robert, if you can name me one person who would give me a US visa that isn't Sotheby's or Christie's, let me know. but that's how I needed a visa. I wanted to stay in America. I'd made a lot of friends at Harvard and just in the US in general. And I just really wanted to stay in America, even if it was for a year or two.
Yeah.
So Sotheby's, I did the trainee program at Sotheby's where you get rotated around the company. I worked in the back room where they bring all the art in. It was my first, you know, 3-week shift, and then I moved to the catalog desk, where I'm sure you've both walked into the auction house. You see a sort of bushy-tailed young gun selling you catalogs. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I was doing that, and I proudly had the record of catalog sales in a day, which was about $11,000, which that's probably the proudest moment in my career.
Of your life, still.
Yeah, exactly. Still, yeah.
What's the skill to selling that many thousands of catalogs?
Initiative, Russell, and
is it joke? Is it telling jokes?
It was, you know, keep it there as long as possible. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of sort of Upper East Side elderly ladies who love a good natter.
Yes,
and who
I and you're the charming British man, I guess.
Well, you know, anyway, so then I sort of campaigned hard with the HR department to move into the contemporary art department because that's ultimately where I wanted to go, and and then I got there and I refused to move anymore. So my trainee program was only about 2 months long, but yeah. So I was in the contemporary art department, and then I quickly actually moved into the business side. The new CEO, Tad Smith, came in, who's now left the company, but he came in and he asked me to work for him alongside a close friend of mine, Bernie. And we worked for him on strategy stuff, but also sort of advising him or letting him know about what was happening in the art world. I think he saw that we were both young and very engaged with what was happening in downtown New York, not just the Upper East Side. And so we sort of sat outside his office and worked there for a few years, which was cool. So I think that's probably why I'm currently in business school, and that's where the business interest has come from. But I've gone on a long ramble of how I got interested in art.
No, that's amazing.
No, Casper, even I didn't know this.
Yes,
yeah,
actually really interesting. I didn't
bloody know
I'm
that.
Actually really interested to know about Harvard and Oxford, because you're currently studying at Oxford University.
Yeah.
The Said
Business School.
You're doing your MBA. But how different is Oxford to Harvard? Because to me, they both sound quite terrifying. It's like they're the kind of like where all the super, super, super bright people go. Mm-hmm. Is it challenging?
Both of them were terrifying, despite the fact Oxford was in my late 20s and Harvard was in my teens. They were both terrifying when I first arrived. And very quickly, you realize that everyone's in the same boat as you. So you really, really do meet some amazing people. And talking to people and just hearing what they've done and how they've got to where they are and why they're there standing in front of you talking to you. Or, you know, sitting at the bar with you, having a beer. That, you know, it's been the time I've been in education has actually been the time I've learned the most from other people, which has been, it's been an amazing experience. I think that's probably why I went back to university, but I'm about two months and then I'm done. And I've promised to never do
it. You've hardly been there because of this time.
Yeah, what's the journey?
Yeah, well, I mean, this year, it's just a one-year program at Oxford, their MBA. Right. So half of it's been online, which is not really, you know, the spirit of an MBA is networking and doing, which I know I was never really going for networking. I was going to just equip myself with the skills that I needed to be a change maker in a business, and you know, whether that's the accounting or the marketing or the business finance, or you know, I'm doing all sorts of other courses, which is, you know, venture capital stuff and investing in private markets, and you know, not non-art stuff or not stuff that I can actually tie to art, but I am equally interested. Maybe it's again my effort to somehow get out the art world, but I think my passion is always going to pull me back that way.
So you see it more as a passion rather than a business. It's like looking into what you're doing. I thought maybe you'd end up wanting your own gallery space one day.
Well, I think it is a passion for sure. I mean, first and foremost, it's a passion, and I think the sort of business side comes with it. And at the moment, and even actually when I was just doing the business stuff and I was out of the contemporary art department at Sotheby's, but more so this year, it's a sort of sabbatical from the art world. And you know, returning to the UK as well has been a big change after 9 years in the US, I've been able to share my passion and the business by working with just a very small number of people that I am close with. And I wouldn't say I'm advising, because I don't want to use that word. It's overused in the art world. And I don't want to use the word clients, because I think of them more as friends. And I only really, you know, when I say a small group, I'm really talking about, I can count them on two hands. And they're people who are really passionate to learn. That's the most important thing to me. And then they're people who want to, you know, allocate some of their wealth to art as an investment, which is another way that I look at art. But, you know, I try and balance these, especially when I'm, you know, buying works of art myself, or if I'm advising Ellie on what to buy, I do balance the passion, you know, the actual importance or the message of a piece with the investment prospects
and
of the piece.
How important is that for you, Ellie, the idea of kind of like expressing yourself through what you collect?
I think it's very important. The more that I learn, especially from Casper. I was just listening to him then. I can just tell by the way that he talks about art and when he gets sent something very new and you know, mysterious, you know, that no one's seen, you know, the way he talks about it is just very telling that he really is in it for, you know, for the passion and because he truly, you know, appreciates art in an incredible way. But I think that he has definitely helped me. Like I'm really proud of the fact that we have such a collection of female artists. I feel like, especially with Tracy, I can really, you know, I can really look at a Tracy and it reminds me of the way that I would, you know, the way that I would draw inspiration to write any of my songs. You know, as you said earlier about love, I write a lot about love and a lot about heartbreak. And I always try and do it in a way that is, that people can, you know, somewhat relate to, or I always provide some kind of resolution. I always, you know, and I'm quite intimate and I'm quite open about my previous relationships and about how they've had an effect on me and the way that I see love and the way that I see, you know, human behavior. But I suppose Casper knows that I'm not really a money kind of person. So when, if he ever said to me, this is a great investment, it kind of just goes over my head and it's like a foreign language to me, money stuff.
Yeah.
I've never really been, and Casper knows this, I've never been motivated by money. I love the idea that you can buy something that you, that, you know, that I can stare at for a long time and then it could maybe at some point draw a song or a lyric out of me. But I never, I never say to Casper, you know, what's a good investment? Quick, get it for me now. It's just not, that's not really how I operate.
You've had material for your music through your artworks. You've actually looked at your own art and found.
Yeah, absolutely. When I moved to New York, I had 2 years of just straight art. I think initially I wanted to impress Casper and anything he invited me to, I said, oh yeah, sounds amazing. Yeah, I'll come. So that initially it was definitely trying to impress him. And then eventually I was just, you know, I became completely immersed in it and I wanted to see something new every weekend. I wanted to go to a different gallery every weekend. And it was, I think it was Doug Wheeler, right, Casper?
It was the Zwirner 25 year anniversary exhibition, which was a really great exhibition in New York. And they had a Doug Wheeler piece. And
what was it like?
The rest, love.
Yeah.
It was an entirely, I mean, it was a blue room. It was like walking into another world. And I don't know why. I don't know whether it was a combination of things that day, whether I was, I don't know, I had PMS or something. But I walked in and it just completely overtook me. And I stood there for a few minutes. And then I walked into the studio the next day and I said, right, the album's going to be called Brightest Blue. It just, no way. Or something like that. Or I said it was going to be called, you know, that something blue. And then we wrote the title track that day and it was about finding a new world in the madness of whatever's going on today. There's so many things, so overwhelming, and finding this escapism. And I think it's kind of a theme with all my albums because I've always loved the idea of giving people another world and making something that people can get lost in. And so I can say that this album was directly influenced by art.
Wow, that's amazing.
Amazing. I was really interested in the sculpture because the photo of you with the Tracy in New York, you also have a Rebecca Warren sculpture, a bronze, hand-painted bronze, and she's another close friend of Russ
and mine. On the totems,
and mine.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a really stunning work that. But I was getting into this idea of like, because both of those works are very kind of gestural and expressive and like they have drips of paint, but they also do represent the kind of female figure and the female
femininity,
body. Is that something that appeals to you then? That kind of gestural expression?
Definitely. Personally, I was always into anything anatomical. I think that came from my kind of, I've always had a morbid fascination since I was really young. I think that's my dad's influence of being obsessed with crime and I was right. Yeah, and the war and think, you know, I
soldiers
guess I was exposed
stuff,
to things when I was young that perhaps, you know, maybe other people my age weren't. In fact, when my mum found out that I was reading these crime books and seeing all these horrific things, I think she literally burnt it on the fire in the garden. Because my parents were separated, so I would see my dad every couple of weeks, and then I'd lived with my mum and her partner. I'm definitely not afraid to have things that are incredibly intimate. And I mean, that's why I love Tracy. And I like things that make you confront something immediately. I mean, we definitely had a few people walk in the apartments. So I went, oh, God, you know. But I could stare at it for ages and not feel remotely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even in our bedroom, we have Rachel Kneebone drawings. We both love Rachel Kneebone's sculptures, mm-hmm. her ceramics, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. her drawings, we saw in the show in Hong Kong at White Cube, and we were just like, we need those, and they're something that sort of Ellie gets up in the morning and looks at them, and they're really dynamic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of the artists we have are sort of dynamic artists, you know, and Julie Meritu's work.
Well, they almost look like a bunch of limbs, you know, like decapitated limbs on one page, but they look like they're dancing.
Very fleshy,
and
they're
fluid,
like that,
yeah, and they're kind of romantic, which doesn't make sense. But I loved to look at those first thing in the morning. They kind of filled me with some kind of spirit. Whereas, you know, but they're definitely not for everyone. But it definitely there's definitely a kind of running theme. In the stuff that I like.
I actually see
a lot of female artists there. It feels like you're collecting female artists' artwork.
There's a lot of female artists, and I'd actually say that Christina Quarles' work is especially with this whole anatomical thing. But her limbs and torsos, they're also incredibly dynamic works. And I didn't see the show at the Hepworth Wakefield, which was my biggest disappointment of last year. But she's another female artist. But we have the Pettibones, we have a few Tillmans, we have...
Oh yeah, I love Tillmans, love.
We have a Jack Whitten, we actually have a Cy Gavin, I don't know if you know him. And then we have a Neon by Jonathan Horowitz, which we got from, who did we get it from? We got it from Gavin Brown, which is a really cool, it's this sort of... double cross, these two crosses joined together with the rainbow color.
That's definitely one of my favorites. I had that above the piano in the short-lived big posh New York apartment time, and it was just this big shining, you know, double cross. We had so many people stop and stare at that. But again, that's somewhere locked up, sadly, in storage or in this little cottage.
So what's the dream piece like for the collection now then? Are there works that you are really after? And do you also look at emerging artists and what's coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to answer this, Ellie, or not, but there's definitely, I mean, I have a list of artists who we both absolutely love. Christina Quarles is top of it. I don't think I've seen a better artist in the last. I'm not going to put a time span on it, but just how you know ambiguous
last week. No.
I just find those works they deal with race and gender and sex in such
very non-binary
way.
And fluid and
exactly and I just think that, I mean she's an amazing artist. But yeah, no, I mean, they're definitely younger artists. I mean, I saw that you interviewed Jamie and Giuliano and also Jasmine, her gallerist. Jasmine's great. And I've always liked Jamie's work. And I actually saw a picture of above your bathtub or something. You have one.
That's right.
Russell's got so many of her works. He's got like five of her works.
I've been collecting
He's even got
them.
One that's
oh, really?
Like the size of your thumbnail or something. He's got a tiny work by her, the smallest work she ever made.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
We went to see a show of hers at Tanya Leighton when she was rep by her in Berlin.
Oh,
me and Rob went over there for Berlin Gallery Weekend, and that was in 2006 or something, I think it was. Rob, I bought a painting from that show, and then since then I've been trying to buy, but obviously the prices now are crazy, so you have to opt out at some point. But it's been really exciting being able to be there from like the beginning of someone's career and actually see the effect you have. And just by putting them on your kind of Instagram, it can give these artists profile and support and encouragement. And that's what's really exciting to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, there's, Maybe we're culprits of not buying young enough, but more sort of emerging enough artists. But I do think, you know, we're always looking around and seeing what we like. And I really like Issy Wood's work.
I love Issy Wood, yeah.
Carlos, yeah.
She was a guest on Talk Art.
We had her on Talk Art.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, she was a recent one, yeah. Yeah, we love her. And she's also making music, Ellie. You should check out her music. She's working with a very big...
I would love to.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast, and we're here today with Budweiser beer, and we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a 4-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and talk art with Sir Peter Blake.
What are your Tillman's images? What ones have you got of his?
We have, I don't remember the name of them. So there's one of two people hugging, which actually I can see from where I'm sitting.
It's like the most incredible hug. And he has this little tiny sort of rolly in his fingers. And he has, he's like got a shaved head and he's wearing a vest. And they're just having this most incredible hug. In fact, we've got that one up here, haven't we, Casper?
That one's up here, yeah. And then there's another one we got, which was we also bought from David Zwirner, and it's a very playful one of a woman sitting on the floor. It's one from, I think, from the early 90s, of a woman sitting on the floor, and it's two names, but I don't remember them. Which is also, I mean, we love. I keep showing, you know, I my friend at David Zwirner keeps sending me works, because I'm always like, send me, please keep sending them to me. We love his work so much.
Same.
And Ellie always likes the ones with the figures in, and I'm always a little more towards
the
still
paper
life.
Drops or the abstract ones, the still lifes. Yes,
the still lifes, the textures, the denims, and the
Fulton Worth series. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You'll be happy to hear, Casper. Totally. We have an almost 2-hour interview with Wolfgang coming out very soon.
Wow.
Oh, cool.
One of the most touching conversations we've ever had. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so deep and emotional. It was fantastic. Very generous of him to give us that long as well. It was just amazing. Ellie, has art inspired your album artwork for your new record? Because when I first saw it, I immediately thought of obviously Joni Mitchell, because that was the album that when I was growing up, my
Blue.
Dad gave
yes,
me
yes,
Blue.
Yes,
and I know you've done a cover, so it's slightly obvious, I guess, but that is what I thought, of course. But there's also something really artistic about that cover, and I thought it was incredibly beautiful, the kind of blue you've used on the front cover. And has art inspired your visuals or how you approach making music videos or anything like that?
It definitely has. I would say safely that I've evolved in a lot of ways since I was a 20-year-old signing a record deal, and I just didn't. It sounds crazy, but I wrote so much. I wrote songs on guitar, and I could sing, and I had that. And I didn't. It sounds mad, but I didn't understand or didn't grasp the connection, the way that I could express my music with art or with visual. In fact, to the point where I was kind of a rebel against it. And I on stage, I wanted to, you know, I didn't want to represent my music, you know, with what I was wearing and the artwork around me, the, you know, the screens and the whatever was on stage. I was really I don't know what the word is, but I was really passionate about it just coming from me and my physicality and the way that I performed and the way that I moved and my voice. And so I was, yeah, like I said, I was almost kind of a rebel against the idea of dressing things up. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like the idea that I would sort of become not human and that everything else would take over. And I saw, you know, I was in awe of artists that just had these incredible visuals, and like, it was like part of their whole thing, you know, in everything that they wore and, you know, their artwork. And I was really conscious that I just wanted to be this human that didn't have anything to try and you know, glitter things
hide
up.
Hide behind,
but
in some
yeah, and, yeah, hide behind, and because you know you can have incredible you know, artwork and you know, photo shoots and things, but then I was so keen on just my songs telling the story that I almost rebelled against that side of it.
It kind of makes sense that though, because it's kind of tied to the idea of authenticity, and you as a singer-songwriter, you believe so much in what you're saying and singing that you kind of don't want the other stuff to be like some sort of fairground attraction.
Yeah,
or distraction.
And you know what? It worked for a long time. I've been doing this for God, I've been doing this for a long time. I'm doing it for like, you know, 10 years now. And I remember in the beginning, it was a real time of songwriters. And it was, I sort of came up at the same time as, you know, Laura Marling and Adele and Florence and the Machine. And it was a real like storytelling time where it wasn't like a huge thing that there wasn't this whole visual to go with it, like a visual kind of like story to go with it. But actually now I do appreciate that it can help you tell that story. And especially in the case of Brightest Blue, where, you know, I can't deny that so much of the album was affected by my time in New York and the fact that I was completely immersed in art. And like I said, it was partly because when I first started playing guitar when I was 15, it was because of a boy, and then obviously that went away, and then I just played guitar regardless. But I can't deny that this album was definitely more inspired by what I saw around me.
And who took the photograph of the album sleeve?
You know what? I've been working with a woman who's amazing called Imogen Snell, and she just has this incredible vision. We had sort of quite a powerful female team actually on that day, and that was ages ago that shoot. It was my friend Louis Banks that took the actual shot, and the first time
Louis
we met
Banks.
Was
Louis
was
Banks
in
is
yeah
here
Louis
in
Banks
I saw him during lockdown. He's been staying in Margate down the
Louis
road.
Louis Banks
from me.
Shoots
he keeps
on Instagram.
Past me and, yeah, I love him.
He's awesome.
Yeah,
he's
chatting
so,
quite a lot. He's really sweet.
He was. I worked with him when I was about 19, and I was. I think I messaged him on MySpace or something and said, "Do you want to take a picture
MySpace.
Of me?" And he was like, "All right." God. And then that was it. And I went down to Brighton where he was studying, and he took some shots of me, and that was my first ever promotional photo. Yeah,
that's so sweet.
Wow. Yeah. Have you worked with a lot of photographers? Have you had some? Because I've seen you've been photographed by Rankin, and then you worked with someone for a couple of years. Who was 19. Who you discovered as well, Ronan Park.
Ronan
is
Park. Yeah.
Is it important? What's the story there? And is it important to you?
I do love the idea of definitely music. I love working with new people. In fact, my first album was made by. We wrote it in a bedroom in Bromley where. This guy, Starsmith Finn, I contacted him as well on MySpace. MySpace was all the rage then. And so I think I liked to work with very fresh people who before they were disillusioned by the music industry. And I felt like it just had the most magic in it. And they were always really, you know, it just had something, that extra kind of, I don't know, like authenticity and just... They, you know, they were putting their mark on it. And honestly, like once you get brought into the music industry, you then get tempted to do things a bit more commercial and naturally people's sound ends up changing. It's so saturated, you start kind of going towards more, I don't know. It just happens. The idea of finding people when they've just started out has always appealed to me. And I'm still always on the search for the newest, freshest producer all the time.
I was really touched by the opening track on the album, even though it's the first song. I've actually listened to it about 10 times because Serpent With Feet, who you collaborated with on that song. I mean, that track is just really striking because it wasn't what I expected the album to be like. I thought the album was going to start with your single Power and it was going to be this kind of 80s inspired kind of, you know, power anthem in a way. Mm. But that track is so touching. And also it's kind of calling back to a time of like, difficult times in a relationship or something, which also wasn't the impression I had of your life now, but with Casper. So it was quite a striking start to the record. And what was it like working with him and all the other collaborators? Because I think he's amazing.
God, I saw him perform with Björk in New York a few years back and was just... It's very rare that I have that cathartic feeling. And when I heard him sing, I was like, oh, my God. And... I thought, God, he's way too cool for me and there's no way that he'll ever want to work with me. And I think I messaged him on Instagram. I always have this insecurity. And I messaged him saying, I just adore you. Is there any way that we could...
Was this on MySpace as well, or was it?
this is the modern-day MySpace Instagram. Okay. And to my absolute surprise, he said, I would love to work with you. I love your voice. And so I made sure that he was the only collaboration on the album because I didn't need anyone else. I felt like anything else would distract from how incredible he is. And actually he did sing at our wedding as well.
No way.
Oh. Yeah, we managed to get him to Yorkshire. I think it just coincidentally he'd done a show in London, then he had a show in Ireland and he stopped off halfway. And you know, I was really together on my wedding day and I was really stoic and I was just really, you know, sounds crazy, but I was thinking of like all the millions of times or I've had to perform in front of thousands of people. And I thought, I can do this. And then the second he started singing, I just completely lost it. I just broke down in tears.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. And Björk's been a big inspiration to you, hasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah,
she has. The first time I saw her performing, I think I got back from some, I think I was about 15 and I'd been out camping. I don't know if any of you used to do this, but camping was a big thing in the teens in the countryside because it was the only time we could get away with drinking and no one would find us or discover us. Yeah. And so we'd take like a bottle of Smirnoff down to like one of the fields and go camping. And I think one night I decided to not stay out and I came home and I stumbled in and I turned the TV on and she was performing, I think, maybe at the Albert Hall. And she was wearing this incredible, I don't know what it was, but it was the first time I'd only ever heard this song, you know, It's Oh So Quiet on the radio. I think it's the only one that they played. Mm. And yes. Then that was like a new thing for me. It was like the first time I heard a female voice that apart from pop singers, it suddenly made me feel like my voice made a bit of sense because I did often have people tell me that my voice was a bit too weird and a bit odd. Mm. And so she kind of made me feel validated in some way.
Awesome.
Wow. Yeah. You also worked with Juice WRLD on the album, which is, that's a sad story about his life. But we had another artist called Catherine Bernhardt, who Rob actually works with and who she's been a guest and she was a massive fan of his work. What was that experience like? And I mean, that's heartbreaking.
God, it really was. The first time that I met him actually was after we did the track and I said I would love Juice WRLD to be a part of this track. And I think a couple of people were like, oh, well, not sure. And you know, in my head, I thought, yeah, he's not going to want to be on an Ellie Goulding track. And to my surprise, again, he said, yes, he'd love to. And he did his verse and it really haunted me. I think the first time I heard him sing Lucid Dreams with the, was it the Sting sample? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I found it really haunting and I instantly wanted to do some kind of project with him. And then we met on the video in LA and he was really sweet and brought his entire family. And I just remember him just being really polite, really sweet. And when I found out obviously about his passing, I couldn't speak. It was, he had a lot more to give, a lot more to offer. And I think even he's released some, I think his family have released some tracks because he really was on his way up and it's just horribly sad.
You know, his passing actually had a massive impact in the artist community, in the art world, especially in New York and in LA. Mm. So I really felt it when he passed. And it devastated Catherine Bernhardt, who we worked with. We actually even sang one of his songs really badly at the end of the interview we did with her. But, but yeah, he was amazing. Guys, can I quickly talk to you about something else now? So the time we've just been through, this lockdown, has been such a kind of, I think a lot of people are reevaluating the way that they're looking at business and the future of their business. And then also now with the Black Lives Matter movement, which is, you know, finally getting heard
gaining momentum everywhere,
kind of global momentum with every single person, you know, we know committing to this now for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about the future of the art world and also the future of the music world, and specifically with the idea of kind of climate as well? Because I know that you're a you're an environmental kind of ambassador, and you care a lot about climate crisis. And there's also been this article that's just come out in the art newspaper, and we're all on a WhatsApp group, all the galleries, and we're forming this kind of gallery climate coalition where we're thinking about getting beyond things like just offsetting your carbon footprint, but actually changing the way that you package artworks for shipping, maybe giving up air flights with shipping completely and only doing sea freight, because even though there's still an impact on the climate with sea freight, it's just a lot healthier for the world. And there's artists like Gary Hume who is saying his work can only travel like that now. So how do you feel about that with music and also the art world?
Casper, do you want to, I've been gassing for a while, do you want to?
I think Ellie missed out the fact that the first thing I said to her before that I love pies and Yorkshire puddings is that I don't know anything about music, so I probably can't comment on the music side, but on the art world side, I mean the question is what's the future for art fairs? Because I think that's probably one of the biggest contributors to mass travel in the art world. Shipping artworks, you know what, shipping artworks with the people I work with, they are more than happy not to have this crazy expedited, like we need it on the plane tomorrow.
I know, it seems irresponsible, and so impatient. It's like,
it really is. But I hadn't heard about this, the galleries forming a coalition around climate, which is, I'm going to look into that, or maybe I'll ask you about it after.
Yeah, the article was written by Annie Shaw, and it came out at the end of May, but it's really well researched and really, she's a brilliant writer.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But there's a whole thing with the shipping, isn't there? It's like all the crates can only get used insurance-wise once, because then if you want to insure it, then so there's all these like empty crates everywhere that are just
totally
massive. Some of them, and then what do you do with those? I mean, I know there's a framing place in London that's turned them into window boxes and stuff, which is a really good idea.
But it's
like that's the part of the thing. It's like there's this excess.
I almost feel like we need to get materials that will degrade. Mm. You know what I mean, and will become back into the earth, sort of thing. So that even if it takes a while, like I don't know, then we need to come up with something. I mean, it is really crazy. Yeah.
I think. I mean, it's not. I mean, the art world and the music world are. You have these people in which Ellie will comment on, but you know, people in the music world who are saying we're not going to tour because we don't agree with the travel and the carbon footprint. But I just don't think you'll ever see that in the art world, which is such a shame. So I think there's got to be a way to figure out how to do this that isn't, I mean, we'll see how augmented.
But the online stuff's been a success, hasn't it? The online gallery, like online viewing rooms, and the art fairs being shown online has sort of worked.
Yeah, it has.
And are your friends, are they buying right now? Is it? Do you feel like they've slowed down?
They are buying, and obviously it's been a busy week just given the fair that's on. So
I keep buying things out of boredom. That's what's the bloody problem with this time.
So what are your online shopping, Ellie?
I keep going on, Net-a-Porter and buying things I absolutely do not need. No, and that's my weakness, shopping. But I think this time is definitely made us realise what we potentially don't need to be doing that we have been doing before. And I think it's going to change people. Like, for example, sorry to cut in, Casper, but like talking about the music world is that I've been doing performances for all kinds, I've done a James Corden performance, I've done a Jimmy Kimmel, I've done Jules Holland, I've done everything from my living room. And I'm like, I think people have appreciated the intimacy of that situation, the fact that they can see my living room and they can see my petabons in the background, they can see my art, they can see my bits and pieces. In fact, most people commented on the size of my bar, which I was a bit offended by, saying suggesting I'm an alcoholic. How dare they? So I wonder if they're gonna then not want to go back to the clinical venues where there's nothing personal about it. And you can literally put on a show where you don't have to be yourself, you can play someone else, you can have all the screens, and you can create these visuals around yourself. And that's it's it's really exciting to watch. But I think there's such a fickle nature in you know, and fast gratification these days that maybe people are going to enjoy watching these things from the house, and maybe people are going to enjoy having to look at art from home. So it's just like it is really interesting from my point of view to understand how people work and what appeals to them, because I think this has definitely opened up a whole new world of appeal in people.
In terms of buying art at any level, you know, even if you're spending a few hundred dollars on a piece of art, or you're spending thousands, I'm curious what you both think about, you know, from the collector side and from the gallerist side, about the importance of seeing an artwork, because I find it very tricky to buy an artwork personally when I can buy an artwork if I've seen a video of it, you know, where they move over the surface and they view it from different angles, and you know what, that is especially in the situation we're in, that is more than enough. Buying it just from a PDF, I really struggle with, or buying just from an image, I really struggle with. But
we as a gallery, Carl was really anti the idea of doing a kind of online viewing room, and he kept saying to me this thing of like, it's just a website. Do people not realize they've been given a password to log into something, and it's just literally a website, you know, with the images that were always there before. It's not really that different. So he made a kind of decision that was quite difficult in lockdown, because we had to install a mini exhibition, you know, without going near any of each other. It was quite crazy. So he went in at like 11 p.m. at night, you know, and made a little film. And like you said, like filmed up against all the works and took all different photographs and different angles, and even made the photographs become a film. And the idea of that was that he curated this mini exhibition, so the works also weren't just randomly sort of put next to each other. They actually were in conversation with each other, and we had a really great success with it. And also it felt considered and personal, and also very true to who we are. And I think that's the key, is to not lose your personality as a gallery through doing something like that.
So people viewed it through the video, is that, we actually built our own
online viewing room, because he got so he just didn't really like anyone's online viewing room, so he made his own using Squarespace. It was videos, really successful.
Everyone has such a short attention span nowadays that doing you know, even watching these long art videos, I just imagine people struggle with them, which is, you know, I'd be very surprised if anyone got to the end of this podcast listening to me drawl on. You know, it's like, you know, people are so like, just what's the next thing? So
I must say, Casper, we're rebelling against that, because we were told when we started doing a podcast you should do 30 minutes, and we've ended up doing like an hour and a half, and listening figures are going up and up and up. And actually, I think people are yearning for real connections and real conversation. I think people will actually find what you've been saying really interesting. So,
do you guys know how a song is counted as a stream technically on Spotify?
No.
It's only counted if you spend 30 seconds or more listening to it.
Okay.
So they've taken into account that people just get bored easily, but it shows that if they've listened to more than that, you know, length, it means that, you know, it counts as a true enjoyment or a true investment of the song, and therefore it counts as a stream. I mean, look, like, it takes millions of streams to make, you know, significant amount of cash or whatever, so that, you know, it's always being questioned as to whether, you know, streaming sites are being fair to artists and things like that. So I just thought that was an interesting fact.
So if they get over 30 seconds, then it's official that they want to listen to it, and if not,
it counts towards a stream, and therefore it counts towards your, essentially, what you end up eventually being,
what your royalties will be.
What your royalties are, and then also your chart position.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. That all contributes. Yeah.
So people listening, if they don't want to, they don't want to give you any money, but they want to hear your music, they can have 30 seconds of each and then just switch off, right?
Look, that's why people are loading up at the first half of a song with something really, you know, spectacular and enjoyable, and then, you know, that's all they need to do.
So they can get paid. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Casper, we also joined Artsy for the first time. We were quite late to the party, I think, because we did sign up in 2014, and then we just didn't really feel it was working for us. But now it seems to be working really well, and I'm doing great business with loads of people in America. But again, everything's going to be shipped very slowly, I think.
Really? Through Arts, you're getting new clients?
Yeah, with both our businesses, because we have the print business, Counter Editions, with very big names, and that's booming through Artsy. And then the gallery's doing really well with certain artists as well, which has really surprised me. And that was Russell's suggestion as well. I asked Russell his advice.
That's great.
Thank you.
He said, Russ, do you like buying online?
Do you know what? I was thinking about that. I'm really happy to buy PDF and JPEG, but only normally artists where I collect in depth or I know their work really well, because then I can sort of gauge what that work's going to be like in the flesh. Whereas if it's a new artist that I don't know, I'm probably more reluctant and want to see it in the flesh. And then when it comes to the masterpieces, we've got to get back in the museums. I can't wait for everything to be open again, because there's no way, there's nothing like enjoying a real masterpiece in front of you in the flesh. But I'm happy.
On your Instagram, you were in Lambeth Green at an exhibition today.
Tommaso Corvimora's opened a show there.
That's such a good exhibition.
An artist called Shawanda Corbett, who is this ceramicist painter. It's her first show. Lynette Yaiden-Biachi is her teacher and recommended that Tommaso looked at her work. And the work is just fantastic. Yeah, I've been out and about. As soon as there's been a gallery saying, like, we're open, I'm there with my mask on, giddy with excitement to get back into gallery spaces.
I've even got a David Trigley mask. So I've made the experience having to wear a mask an artwork. Good times.
Does it say something funny on it?
It's a performance artwork, Rob, yeah.
It says emotions, which is very me as well. Very listening to Ellie's music this morning.
So we ask every guest that comes on two very important questions. The first one is, if you two, and you can answer this separately or together, if you could do an art heist, you could have any work of art in the world to yourselves for the Golding Joplin collection, what would it be and why?
Casper, you have to answer this one, surely.
I always like to consider your perspective on an artwork. for me, I mean,
very wise.
I'd find it hard not to steal, you know, a Pollock drip painting. Maybe I'm going too classic.
Would it be a Twombly for me?
It would be a Twombly for you, yeah, for sure.
Bloody
I think you'd steal
Twombly.
It from a certain collector's house, which probably not best said on here.
Yeah, but, exactly.
I'd go to Steve Cohen's house and I'd probably just loot the lot.
Really? So you love his collection?
I'd go to Jay's house and loot the lot, to be honest.
Yeah.
What have they got? What are their pieces then that you look at?
What's the one in Jay's hallway that I'm completely obsessed with?
I don't know if Jay would want us to talk about, but off topic, George Bartlett's is an artist that Ellie really loves. So
it is a George Bartlett's. Yeah, I'm going to disclose that right now. Yeah, and I would die to have that.
The upside-down figure, is it, of a man upside down, is it? Yeah.
It's a really great piece. But I guess I don't have a concrete answer. I think there are many places that I would just want to go and loot. But you know, maybe you'll see that in the news. You know.
Yeah. When you went to Venice as a kid, did you go to the Peggy Guggenheim?
You know what? I've never been. So that's
It's one of my favorite places in the world. It's like,
really,
I love that. Really, yes, special, I love her house.
Really,
you've got to
actually.
Go there,
you know what? You know what? Actually, you know what? I would steal, but it wouldn't fit in here. Is Guernica? I've only been to Madrid.
It's a basic art heist.
Once or two. It's a basic art. I mean, I'd probably have to take it off the stretcher and roll it, but you know, I imagine I could get out the window quick enough.
Is it even one stretcher? Yeah, I think it's probably like more than one stretcher.
it's probably
like
a lot of
stretchers.
The biggest
work I've ever seen, yeah.
But that was a work that I have probably spent the longest standing in front of. And I almost missed a flight. I had a very angry father. We had a family weekend in Madrid, which is one of the two times I've been to Madrid.
Prado, isn't it? Yeah.
Spent a lot of time in the Prado and the Reina Sofia, and both incredible museums. And I just stood in front of Guernica for so long. And actually, my mum went recently to Madrid for the first time, and I told her to go and see it. And she is not as much of an art enthusiast as I am, but she said that she could understand the power in it, especially when she knew the context of the painting.
Absolutely.
The other question we ask every guest is linked to Ellie's new album cover, album title. What is your favourite colour? And you can't say brightest blue.
Oh, no.
The brightest blue.
The brightest, not just any brightest.
Blue, the brightest.
The brightest
blue.
Brightest blue. Yeah, what is your favourite colour?
I am a bit of a weirdo. I have to wear black every day. I have to wear... It's very rare that I will not wear black unless I've been sent an outfit where my people say, wear this. So when I'm in the studio, I have to wear all black, kind of like a blank canvas, so that I don't get distracted by anything that I'm wearing. I can't wear... I once drunkenly indulged in buying myself a diamond ring, which I now regret, in the height of my like kind of rock star period. And I can't wear any kind of jewelry, any makeup, anything with colour in the studio. It has to be black t-shirt, black, I can't even wear tight trousers. It has to be like I'm about to embark on something physical. Yeah, so maybe that's kind of my answer. What about you, Casper?
Well, effectively, you're a goth. You're coming out as a goth.
I was a goth.
You're
when
in,
I was a
you're in the craft,
yeah.
Basically.
I can imagine
fact,
it, though.
Yeah. I had my lip pierced, in the middle, below my bottom lip, and I was 14 when I had that. And that was really out there, 14, having like a bar in your lip. Yeah. And then I did have a lot of piercings. But I was a,
did
I,
you have
I was
your tongue
a bit
done?
Of a goth. Didn't have my tongue done. I had my belly pierced twice. I had about 7 up each ear. Then I had my lip. Didn't have my nose. But I did dye my hair black for a good few years.
That's where all the taste comes from for that art you were buying. Like very emotional, like gothic, like
I
dark,
think it might.
Shipwreck
yeah.
art.
Yeah.
Casper, what's your favourite colour?
My favourite colour is orange, which I remember I used to have a pair of trousers that were orange and I used to get called. Anyway, that doesn't matter what I used to get called, but I think that
it does,
orange...
It does matter. You can't say anything. It's half
really
the joke
matter.
And the story.
Does,
what did you get called, Casper? Something to do with rock, paper and scissors? Or
it was something to do with that, yeah. It was a Richard Prince joke. But orange, I mean, orange, I don't have a reason for loving orange, but and actually, in Sotheby's, they tell you orange is not a commercial colour, but I think orange is. I know exactly. I totally
orange
disagree.
Is my favourite colour, and you've got really good.
Oh, taste. It is.
So, yeah.
But it's a very emotional colour, I think, and I think the same way with Marmite, people either love it or hate it, don't they? And it's energy and it's.
It is energy. I agree.
It is. Yeah. And it's, yeah. I don't know, and you
what
know.
Else,
and
what else do they tell you at Sotheby's? What else, what, like, that makes
what
me
other lies
the
have
John
they told
Bald,
you?
The John Baldessari painting
red cells,
that
red
gives
cells,
you all the
orange
rules.
Doesn't.
Oh, wow.
And the cows don't sell, do they? And a painting of a cow doesn't sell,
sometimes
but a sheep
they say green
or a horse
doesn't sell
will.
As well, I think. I've heard that.
You know what, they're saying that. There's a picture in Carlos Ishikawa's booth in Art Basel of a cow that I really want to buy. And Vanessa Carlos was emailing me and telling me how amazing it is. And it's funny that you mentioned that. I think it's, you know,
it
it's, and that's
ben
a young
Eichmann's?
Artist.
Is it him?
Yeah. No, it's not.
Ben
no, it's Eichmann's. Not. It,
oh.
No, it's
we
not. I. He's great. But there is, it's an artist that I hadn't heard of, but I'm trying to pull it up on my computer, but I can't find it. You should check it out. Check out their PDF preview or their website. Oh,
and actually,
website.
You know, you were talking about what people called you at school. I've heard you describe yourself as a dork as well, which is another great thing because Russell and I are both geeks. So we
total
relate.
Geeks.
I think we're all geeks here. I think we've all determined we're all a bunch of nerds. Yeah.
totally. Well, you guys are great. I've got one last question for you. It's really serious. Apparently you love puzzles. You'd make them together.
I've got this.
What images?
And apparently
what images are on your puzzles?
Is easy for you. I was like, what?
Are they RT 400 pieces or are they, what are they, beans?
Are they
beans or
paintings?
Like
what
buildings?
They?
What are
the
they
last,
of your
the
puzzles?
Last, the last puzzle that Casper had to endure was a I once mentioned that I loved Downton Abbey, and so somebody bought me a Downton Abbey puzzle, and Casper had to do that. He was so bored. I think that was the only option.
I've never watched Downton Abbey, but it was a fun puzzle, and we do have, you know, sort of Liechtenstein, Kandinsky sort of knockoff puzzles. Good. I guess they couldn't afford the rights, so they're just. They're knockoffs.
Classy. I love this. Puzzles. You know, we spoke to Elton John recently, and he was also doing puzzles. So it seems to be the great thing to do in lockdown. I've got some Downton Abbey gossip for Ellie.
Have you?
So
yes.
Ellie,
yes,
I used to be in a band a long time ago, and we actually did a gig together in 2010 at the ICA Gala, which is also very art related. We were supporting Brian Ferry. And you did like an acoustic set. It was at Coco in Camden.
What?
And you did an acoustic set. It was kind of March 2010.
Way.
I looked it up today. And I was in a band called Tempo Shark, and I played just after you, and then Brian Ferry came on. That was my last ever concert, so I gave up music for that. But
really?
The year after, Downton Abbey in America took one of my songs and used it for the advertising campaign in America. And I found out the first day at Frieze, my first ever day working as a gallerist at an art fair, my mum called me and was like, the night before or something, and was like, I think you've had this offer for like Downton Abbey. So I've actually got a link to Downton Abbey.
Wow.
And then Russ and I went to this hilarious like charity gala the other month for Mr. Porter. And one of the actresses, the lead actress, Laura... whatever her name is. Laura Carmichael, is that her name?
Yes, Laura Carmichael.
So she came up to me and was like, I love your podcast. So we have Downton Abbey fans.
Oh, great.
I've never seen
Downton Abbey. It's a big escapism thing for me. I used to be really into period dramas. I don't know. It's something about, it's just, Casper's really not on the same... it's not his thing at all. I am a big fan of, you know, old, period stuff.
Great.
Wonderful.
And favourite museum to finally finish up, Casper, Ellie, what's your favourite museum in the world?
MoMA. So it's boring, but it's MoMA, Tate. MoMA, Tate, Reina Sofia, but probably MoMA. I think it's hard to
think Tate. I think Tate for me. I don't know why. I mean, it's kind of down the road from my place in London. And I think maybe because, partly because of us, Casper.
It was our first date. Tate Modern.
Yeah, that was our first date. Tate Modern, yeah. That was a fun day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. what are your favourite museums? And you've probably said them in another podcast, but I apologise.
I'd like to know.
Mine would be in the States is the Whitney. I love the Whitney.
I think that's magic.
I love that place. And then in the UK, I really love what the Chisenhow does. I think they're an amazing institution. Obviously, yeah, the Tate is a no-brainer. What about you, Rob?
I love the Reina Sofia because I just think it's one of the best places in the world to be. Like, I feel the happiest I've ever felt when I'm there.
Oh,
and I also
so
think
nice.
Madrid has
oh,
the most great. Incredible light. And I'd never seen, like, Hieronymus Bosch before. And I saw it there for the first time and, like, just all these paintings. And I saw a Goya show there. And it kind of taught me about old art. Funnily enough, Russ and I are actually writing a book at the moment, a talk art book. And one of the things I've said in the intro is this idea that when I was growing up, I hated old art, you know, this so stuffy and just was not interested in it. But with Reina Sofia is where I went and actually for the first time realised the kind of majesty and incredible talent of these and mental ideas. I mean, the stuff in the Hieronymus Bosch paintings are more progressive than like, even like a Rachel Kneebone you were mentioning earlier, you know, like just totally insane, like, wild. And you can't quite believe that's the 1500s. It's like, really?
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Well, thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
It's so exciting having two people on the show. It's like really different.
Yeah. Two people in love with art. It's amazing.
Love. Let's bring it back to love.
So for all images about we were talking about today, everyone listening, we have at Talk Art on Instagram. And are you two guys on Instagram and up for people
are
following?
They on Instagram?
We are indeed.
What's your handles?
Mine's just at Ellie Goulding.
Yeah, mine's at Casper Jopling, and it's just a
I
lot
followed
of,
you
it's
today,
just a
Casper.
Lot of art. I know, I saw, and I actually
I think you followed me
I followed
back.
You back. I follow you both back.
And I was thrilled by your Instagram, actually, Casper, because you have about 15 Rebecca Warren sculptures posted. And that's my favourite artist. I was like, this guy's really cool.
We love Rebecca Warren.
Thanks for supporting her, because we love her. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back very soon. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks, guys. I love that. That was so much fun.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift-giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.